Now let's move on to Professor Mark Katz, a view from the United States.
Thank you very much. I too would like to thank the Sasagawa Peace Foundation for organizing this seminar and for inviting me here, and also give a special thanks to Professor Iwashita for his role in organizing all this. And I guess to follow Oksana's lead, I do want to emphasize that I don't speak for the U.S. government, and I don't think anyone would ever mistake me as speaking for the U.S. government, but I think perhaps I should just say that. Now, in terms of the United States, I think that it's fair to say that the Shanghai Cooperation Organization does not figure largely in American foreign policy thinking. There's a lot of other issues that have higher priority, and so there hasn't been a lot of focus on it. To the extent that there has, people seem to either think of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as a potential threat to the United States, as a budding alliance, as a substitute for the Warsaw Pact, or they dismiss it as irrelevant. I like to argue that probably both of these views really are mistaken, that it shouldn't be seen as a threat, but it is merely because it's not a threat doesn't make it unimportant. It is important, and that there are things for the U.S. and the SCO to talk about. But let me talk about why the U.S. has tended to see it as a threat. There have been several things that have happened to create this image. Shortly after the formation of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, the U.S. government asked to observe the summit, and of course the U.S. was denied. But later on, several countries were invited to be observer members, including Iran, which has very hostile relations with the U.S., and therefore it's not surprising that many in the U.S. Saw the Shanghai Cooperation Organization as hostile to the U.S. Second, of course, was what happened at the 2005 summit. The call for U.S. and coalition forces to set a timetable for withdrawing from Central Asia, and of course the expulsion of American forces from Uzbekistan. The idea developed that, in fact, one of the aims of the SCO is, in fact, to drive America out of Central Asia. Thirdly, the fact that Iranian President Ahmadinejad appeared at the 2006 summit, and of course he'll appear at this year's summit as well, gave rise to the view that perhaps Russia and China were using the SCO as a mechanism to shield Iran from American and European efforts aimed at getting it to curtail activities in the nuclear realm, which we regard as threatening. And so for all these reasons, we have tended to see it as threatening. Now, once again, what is the SCO? There seems to be for all its members seem to have different views as to what it's actually about. For China, it seems to be more of an economic cooperation organization. I don't think the U.S. really regards this as a threat. For the Central Asian states, it seems that in many respects they regard it as an organization designed to keep America, especially American democratization efforts, at arm's length, and yet play Russia and China off against each other. So this is understandable. But I think what the U.S. sees as perhaps of most concern is what we see as Putin's image of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And certainly he has made statements indicating that he sees it as a powerful or potentially powerful political military alliance. And what's especially interesting is that he seems to count the observer members, India, Pakistan, Iran, and Mongolia, as if they were full members. I think there was one particular statement in which he talked about how the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is 3 billion strong in terms of the population. Of course, India and China together form the bulk of this. Even without Russia, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization would be almost this many people. And so this is something that I think has been of concern. That I think that, you know, it's been seen as a potential alliance, and certainly we saw earlier this year Putin's efforts to link the Shanghai Cooperation Organization's military exercises with those of the Collective Security Treaty Organization, CSTO. Now, obviously, the Chinese didn't let this go forward, but the fact that Putin wanted to do this told many in America that this is what his ultimate aim is. But more than an alliance, what Putin's vision of the SCO seems to be as an alternative system of international relations, different from that the Western one. In other words, that this is a system of international relations, as Oksana mentioned, in which the members are to, you know, practice non-interference in the internal affairs of the members, especially of Russia. That they are to respect, you know, one another's internal politics, essentially as a system of protecting authoritarian regimes. And that obviously the larger this Shanghai Cooperation Organization grows, the more people more governments that become members or observers, does this in fact tend to isolate the United States, especially with its push toward democratization. This is something that people seem to worry about. And I think that many of these fears are understandable, but that they are a bit overblown. It strikes me that at least Putin's vision of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, that there are five problems in implementing it. The first of these is that the Chinese leadership does not share Putin's vision of making the SCO into a political military alliance. And the Chinese have made it very clear that they are going to simply not go along with any such efforts to make it such. Second, whereas Russia's relations with the United States have deteriorated, I'll let you decide, who's at fault here or what the cause is, but I think that it's indisputable that Russian-American relations have deteriorated. But although this has happened, the relations between the U.S. and several SCO members have not. That China, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, even Tajikistan have better relations with the U.S. than either Russia or Uzbekistan does, and that these countries are not simply going to go along with any Russian efforts to exclude the U.S. or to curtail their relations. At least they're not going to do so willingly. Third, although Putin and many Russian government officials seem to have, to see China as a strategic ally, certainly we have seen increasing commentary in the Russian press critical of China, fearful of China, expressing concern that, if Russia succeeds with China in pushing America out of the Central Asia, then in fact Russia will simply have made itself the junior partner of China there. And is this really the best thing for Russia? Does Russia really have such an interest in doing so? Not that these statements are pro-American, but they reflect a fear of China. And it strikes me that, at a time when the Russian press, if not controlled by the Kremlin, certainly is increasingly influenced by the Kremlin, the fact that more and more of these statements appear in the Russian press argues that this point of view must have some kind of purchase within the Kremlin, that these views wouldn't appear so often otherwise. Another problem is Uzbekistan. That one of the problems of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is that Uzbekistan has chronically poor relations with each of its Central Asian neighbors, including the SCO members, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and that neither Russia nor China, either bilaterally or through the SCO, seems willing or able to do anything about this. So long as that's the case, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan are going to have an incentive to seek assistance from other powers, including the United States. And so this is something that's happened. And finally, one of the problems that strikes me is the issue of the expansion of the membership. We've already mentioned that India, Pakistan, Iran, Mongolia are observers. Pakistan and Iran seem very keen on joining as full members. There may be other states that would like to join as observers and later as full members. But it strikes me that the question of the expansion of the membership poses problems for Russia, whether it occurs or whether it does not occur. If the membership expands, then this, in fact, may serve to dilute Russian influence over the SCO, that these are governments that, for example, Iran, despite its poor relations with the United States, Iran has rather poor relations with Russia, that one might think that having poor relations with the U.S. would provide the Iranians with an incentive to go along with what the Russians want. Well, it hasn't, and it strikes me that this would not change if Iran became a full member of the SCO. Similarly, I think that taking on new members means taking on their conflicts, and I think that this is especially a problem with India and Pakistan. Maybe if the SCO could invite them, have them both in at the same time, that would sort of neutralize it. But India seems far less interested in joining than Pakistan. Now, if Pakistan joins, then does India become offended? Does it see the SCO as something that supports Pakistan? I have a feeling that they would, and therefore, or do they both join? And then what does the SCO do about the Kashmir conflict? And it's not clear that the SCO can do much of anything. On the other hand, not admitting new members strikes me as a problem as well, because if you have governments that have expressed their interest in joining and you don't let them join, sooner or later they're either going to lose interest in joining or they're going to become offended if they've expressed the desire to join and they're not accepted. Well, what's wrong with them? They don't see anything wrong with them. They think they're perfectly acceptable. And so why shouldn't they join? And so it strikes me that the question of expanding the membership is a bit of a problem. In my view, these problems that I've mentioned, fear of China, the problems with Uzbekistan, the problems with expansion, etc. What they all add up to is that the SCO really can't function effectively as an alliance, and that therefore there really shouldn't be an awful lot of concern about it in that sense. That and of course the biggest problem, of course, is the Russian-Chinese rivalry. Now, on the other hand, I don't think that the SCO should simply be dismissed either. The stated principles of the SCO is that they are opposed to terrorism, separatism, extremism. What we also think is that they are, these are all governments that are opposed to democratization. Even the Kyrgyz government, supposedly the child of the Tulip Revolution, that it seems to, well, let's say that the tulip is no longer blossoming, shall we say. It seems to be having quite some problems. What is the aim? Well, it strikes me that in fact, that the U.S. and the SCO do have certain common interests. It seems that the full members and even the observer members are all opposed to Sunni Islamic fundamentalism. And I think that certainly in terms of talking about Iran, this is something that I think that people often overlook, that they are just as threatened by Sunni Islamic fundamentalism as others are. Certainly the government of Pakistan is under threat from Al-Qaeda and its allies as well. They are very much worried about this. Therefore, we have a common interest in continuing to work on this issue. In terms of against separatism, the United States is not promoting separatism in this part of the world at all. So the one sort of big issue dividing them is democratization, and this is something that America unabashedly supports and that the SCO members unashamedly oppose. But I think, however, that certainly in terms of the United States, what we've seen is that the urge for democratization is simply not as strong as I think certainly the Bush administration thought it was. That the color revolutions that have occurred in Georgia, in Ukraine, in Kyrgyzstan, that the results have been somewhat disappointing, and that we don't really see. A tremendous urge for this once again. Now, I know that there are many, especially in this part of the world, who see the U.S. as behind the color revolutions. But in fact, really, these were local forces. The U.S. government can't, you know, force hundreds of thousands of people to be out on the streets for days on end. They did this on their own. But I think that in Central Asia in particular, there are certain preconditions for democracy, and unfortunately they're just not yet present in Central Asia. And I think that there's now a greater understanding enthusiastically expecting that democratization can occur simply by, you know, the crowd pouring into a presidential palace and the incumbent president fleeing, that doesn't lead to democratization, that Kyrgyzstan simply has a lot of problems that make it very difficult for this. And so it strikes me that this need not be the obstacle that's been perceived to be, that the U.S. is much less enthusiastic. We would like to see democratization, but we're much less enthusiastic. That those who oppose democratization, it's just not in the cards just yet, it seems to me. So we have things to talk about, and you know, I think that the U.S. Obviously not going to become a full member of the SCO, not even an observer member, but I think that it should become a dialogue partner, as should the EU and Japan, and that, you know, that this is, you know, when the 2005 statement made calling for the U.S. to set a timetable for withdrawal, one of the elements of that statement was that the operation in Afghanistan seemed to be nearing a conclusion. Well, I think 2 years later, what we all know is that that's simply not true, that if anything, the threat in Afghanistan is greater. And so, in fact, do the SCO governments really want the U.S. to withdraw? I think that, you know, in many ways, for some of them, this would be emotionally quite satisfying. But if the U.S. is not there, do they really want to deal with the Taliban on their own? And as Oksana indicated, you know, maybe there will be a withdrawal from Afghanistan. What does that mean does the SCO want to encourage that? Another thing I think that we can cooperate on is that there seems to me, certainly this year in particular, although Russian-American relations have deteriorated, we've also seen Russian-Iranian relations deteriorate, that there seems to be a greater concern in Moscow about the prospect for a nuclear-armed Iran. And it seems to me that the U.S. and the SCO, to the extent that they can work together, this can send a message to Iran that Russia and China are not necessarily the partners Iran may have hoped would be there to shield Tehran from changing its behavior in the nuclear realm. So I think that there is room for dialogue. On the other hand, it takes two sides have to be willing for a dialogue to take place. And I think that if the Russian campaign for the Kyrgyz to expel the U.S. from the base in Manas succeeds, this is going to make dialogue difficult. I also think that if Iran does become a full member of the SCO, this will make dialogue difficult. I don't think the latter is going to take place, but it seems that there are forces who are really trying to get the U.S. out of Manas, and if that works, I'm not sure that everyone's going to be better off. So there's definitely things we need to talk about, and I certainly hope that we do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Katz. We had a very good time, and I'd like to recommend all of you to read his paper right here. It's very short, and that is a very good supplement for his talk today.